Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. We are your primary selection team here at Cattle. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
This is one of our February podcasts, and in a nod to the heart that is often associated with February, we are talking about relationships, but about as broadly, I think, as we can make it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think we have a grand total of one romance on this list. So, but we did. We wanted to kind of take it broadly and talk about different things. So maybe we just get right into it?
Sure. So I've got the first title today. This is a young adult nonfiction title. It's called Abuela, Don't Forget Me by Rex Ogle. And this is an amazing, it's a verse, a nonfiction title. It's really an honor for Rex to give to his abuela, who is has really been instrumental in his life. And if you don't have not read the memoir Free Lunch, that was on a couple lists maybe 2 years ago, amazing book. Free Lunch was about a middle schooler describing what it's like to be very poor growing up in Texas and going through that first year of middle school. And I'll say that he has not had a great relationship with his mother, very volatile, I guess you could say. But this grandmother has always been in the picture, supporting him, loving him, taking him in when necessary. And the Abuela book, Don't Forget Me, is a series of free verse poems that kind of highlight what she has done for him. She has taken him to the public library. She has provided food for him. She has provided so many little fun activities. I mean, there was like a little hamper in the house where Grandma lived or Abuela lived. And he would hide in there and she would come back and she would play with him. He receives so much love from her. So Abuela, present day or speed up, is now having some memory issues and doesn't always, you know, remember all the stories, but some stories she definitely does. And at one point, you know, he describes her as being this very tough, strong, superhero person because, like I said, he's not receiving a lot of support from his mom as he's growing up. And just how important. And what I really liked about the book is that Abuela, by the way, well, was actually born and raised in Mexico as a child. And she came to the U.S. Maybe in the 60s. She married a military person. But she describes quite often to Rex about how poor her family was, how often they didn't have enough to eat, and what it was like to come to the U.S. and to all of a sudden have a nice home after she married her husband, her American husband, and have food. And just these little messages of, like, you have so much, Rex, so much to be thankful for, so much, you know, food. And she intersperses Spanish throughout the whole book. It's so sweet. I love it. She's constantly trying to teach him little things. And anyway, at the end, I really like how Rex talks about how, you know, what it means to go back and forth and continue reading, spending time with his grandmother decades later. Says she does not always remember the pecan trees or the geese or even the hamper, but when Abuela and I speak, she says, te amo, and I say, te amo siempre, and she says, I love you more, and I say, imposible. And I mean it. It's just such a sweet, sweet book.
That's great.
Wow. I love the resilience that he's developed as a result of this relationship with his grandparent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's really beautiful. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, the only segue between your book and mine, all of ours are, there's a thin made-up thread that we're making today between all of our books, is that the grandmother in this book is so stoic, English grandmother, and not really that warm and fuzzy. In fact, the first time that Helen Humphreys meets her grandmother and she goes to stay in England, she has to go outside a lot because there are certain times of day where the children should be outside and not inside with the adults. So not quite the same relationship, but This book that I'm going to talk about is called In a Dog Called Fig, Solitude, Connection, and the Writing Life by Helen Humphreys. And Helen Humphreys is a Canadian author of a number of fiction books and nonfiction books, including one called The Ghost Orchard, which was sort of a history of apples. So she, in this book, it's about a lot of relationships, but at the heart of it is the relationships between people and their dogs. So for anybody who loves dog memoirs, who loves intimate books about people and relationships with animals, maybe even Helen MacDonald, like H is for Hawk, or really anything. It's a dog in this instance, and it's about dogs, but it can be about anybody who just loves animals like that. And it's also a great book for writers because Helen Humphreys is a writer. She was a writer right out of high school. That's where she spent time with that grandmother to write her first novel, kind of lonely. And it's a lot about solitude. It's about the role of walking. In almost all of writers' or artists' existence, that the role of getting out and walking and getting out of your head and doing something physical. And tied to that, the role of walking with a dog. And so throughout this book, we get a memoir. Helen Humphreys purchasing a baby Vizsla. And Vizslas are a Hungarian breed of hunting dog. They're very high maintenance when they're puppies. And this puppy, Fig, is beautiful but difficult, biting to the point of like drawing blood. And so it's a story of Helen trying to bond with the dog in the middle of an icy Canadian winter and try to get her a bit trained. It's also looking back at Helen's favorite dogs, her Vizslas from the past, including Charlotte, who has like the soul of like a, you know, a sage, you know, this beautiful, beautiful, quiet heart and that bond that they had. But it's also the story of famous writers and their dogs. So we have Virginia Woolf, we have Alice Walker, we have Mary Oliver, we have Anton Chekhov, and there are pictures of the dogs if she has them, and just these quirky relationships that quirky dogs that people had and the relationships that they had with them and the role of those dogs in their writing life. So there's a lot going on here, but it was an extremely beautiful, sort of intimate, quiet memoir. Really enjoyed this. Came out last year.
Okay. This is another, again, tenuous relationships to their two relationships. This may be a little closer to free lunch in a sense. I want to talk about two books that actually made the Michigan Notables list this year. And what I like about them both making the list is the symmetry of it. One is As Long as I Know You, the mom book by Anne-Marie Ooman. And this is sort of it's a heartbreaking story of a mother and daughter who don't really like each other, but the mother is kind of in her last days. This is also kind of a COVID story, and it's a parent who has dementia there, and she's in the area, she's helping take care of her. It's a very interesting look at a very complicated relationship and how the child has to kind of come to terms with it, really themselves, especially in a situation where the parent has dementia. But the other book is Magic Season, A Son's Story by Wade Rouse. Very similar and different storyline in which, you know, Wade Rouse talks, and if you're not familiar, Wade Rouse is a great nonfiction writer, but he is very famous for his books under the name Viola Shipman, and very popular Michigan fiction. But this is sort of detailing, you know, before he was Ray Rouse, he was Ted Rouse's son. He was a queer kid growing up in conservative Ozarks. They just did not understand each other. The only thing they had in common was they could talk over baseball. They were both Cardinals fans. And, you know, that's sort of all they could communicate through. And when his father, after his mother's death, and when his father is, his health is declining, it's, you know, it's going and trying to keep him, you know, theoretically comfortably in his house as long as they are able. It's, you know, sometimes it's he and his partner going and staying in Arkansas, and it's an uncomfortable set of conversations that are always happening. But again, it's one of those things where it's the child in both books that's having to kind of come to terms with the relationship, because in a lot of ways the parent is either unable to move or just unmoving. And they're both tough books, but they balance so neatly that it's kind of interesting that they came out the same year.
Pulling Down the Barn was an earlier Michigan Notable Book memoir by Anne Marie Ooman, and mm-hmm. I also recommend that. And you go back to those family memories in Newaygo, I think it's Oceana County.
Oceana County, yeah.
Yeah, and just such a fantastic memoirist. Mm-hmm. And pulls you right into being a child again, you know, being in the barn and doing dangerous things and almost breaking your neck, jumping from a loft, mm-hmm. but those family dynamics and trying to get that identity, mm-hmm. you know. To have an identity in a large family,
right.
you know, like
right.
that. Yeah.
Yep. Yes. Mari?
Yeah. So the next title I have, it's actually an adult graphic novel. It's called Wash Day Diaries. It's by Jamila Rouser and Robin Smith. And it actually started out as a webcomic that got expanded into more stories. And this is really about four best friends. It's kind of honoring the best friend clique or group. And I look back on my youth, which could be in my 20s or 30s at this point, which is what I'm guessing is the setting for this book. These ladies, Kim, Tanisha, Devine, and Cookie, are living in New York. And it's really, you know, about a certain thread that kind of is experienced throughout the book. It's about hair and caring for your hair, washing it, conditioning it, adding nourishment to your hair. These are Black women who share a lot together. So there are scenes, you know, where sometimes they're like helping each other do their hair, or they're in salons, or they're getting braids. They're, you know, we're talking about dating situations, family dramas, and sometimes it's in text. So it's kind of neat to see how present day it really is. It's very funny, and I think really personifies just, you know, Black joy, but mm-hmm. the bond that you can have when you have a solid group of friends that you can hang out with, talk to, and share your life together. Very slice of life, very nice. So,
very cool.
All right, yep. So I'm going to move on to a book it came out this year, and I'm hearing a lot about it, and so it is called Unraveling, What I Learned About Life While Shearing Sheep, Dyeing Wool, and Making the World's Ugliest Sweater by Peggy Orenstein, and maybe a little lighter than some of the books I've had on the podcast lately, but it does have some heavier tones, which ties into the relationship piece in our podcast. So this is really a story. This is a pandemic story. It is about, you know, remember when some people were baking like crazy and doing all these massive projects and, you know, looking at museums online and all these things people are engaging in during the COVID pandemic. Well, Peggy Orenstein she's a lifelong knitter. And in this book, there's a lot of link about how many people learn to knit from their mothers. And she even made an acronym for it. And so that's one of those ways that people bond with their mothers through time, even if they had difficult relationships, is through knitting. So she's a knitter, and she has this idea. What if I go to the source, to the sheep, and I learn how to shear sheep, which is incredibly difficult and dangerous, we learn in this book, and then I learn how to wash the wool, because it's really, really dirty, and figure out how to have enough to spin the wool, card the wool, spin the wool, dye the wool with natural elements, natural plants, and then actually knit the sweater. So she is like becomes sort of obsessed with this. I have to do this. So it starts with going to this fantastic, you know, sheep farm that engages in regenerative agriculture. And through this book, we get a lot of dialogue and discussion about environmental practices, about clothing and the toll of making clothing on our environment, not just the manufacturing that you think of, but the dyeing of clothing in particular. There's some history about color and dyes, which is extremely fascinating. I literally did not know any of this information about dyeing and colors that was in this book. But it's also a story about aging, about a woman who has an only child that she loves, who she knows is going to be going off to college soon. She's mourning the loss of her mother, and she's also trying long distance to keep her relationship healthy with her father, who is in Minnesota, And she's in, you know, California, the author is. And they're doing, you know, FaceTime or calls, and he has Alzheimer's. So she's trying to keep that going, too. So it's one of those great books that combines memoir with this kind of humorous and sort of obsessive idea of making this sweater. And so just a really interesting read that touches on a lot of topics, and one I recommend, Unraveling by Peggy Orenstein.
Okay. Again, that tenuous thread. Yes. Bad, but had to be done. There's a little bit of weaving in this one. I want to talk about The Crane Husband by Kelly Barnhill, and I will say this one isn't coming out until February 28th, but it is holdable now. This is a strange and wonderful contemporary take on the story of the crane wife. It's a Japanese folk tale or tradition in which a poor man comes across a crane that needs help. He nurses it. It releases it back into the wild, and the next day a woman appears on his doorstep, marries the woman. The woman, they need money. She is a weaver and weaves fabulous things that keep, and something happens. She said, I'll do this, but you can never watch me do it. I have certain different versions of, you know, what he's never supposed to do. And he, of course, oversteps that boundary, and she flies away. This story is a contemporary version. It's told from the point of view of a daughter who's devoted to her father. Her father has just died. She talks a little bit about the death of her father. She has a younger brother that she's pretty much been raising. Her mother is a weaver, very involved in her work, very flighty in some ways. And after her father dies, not too long after, her mother shows up with a new man in her life, except the new man is not a man. It's a crane in men's clothes.
Wow.
The daughter's really not sure what she's supposed to make of this, whether she's supposed to mention it, how this all is going to work. She hopes it's just a brief dalliance, if that's what it is, because it's odd. But it is a strange kind of semi-gothic magic realist story about the daughter having to deal with this person who is basically becoming a stepfather in the household, and how her mother is no longer paying any attention to the children. She is absolutely having to take care of her son, her brother. She had previously been selling her mother's works online as her manager, and her mother isn't producing work, so she's just trying to figure out there are. Child Protective Services is visiting occasionally, and she's trying to railroad that, you know, keep that from... She just doesn't want her and her brother split up. That's her biggest goal. It's just a really... It's a creepy story. It's an interesting story. And there's a running theme that her mother has told her that, well, in their family, as long as... Once the kids are self-sufficient, the wives fly away. And it's the Kelly Barnhill runs with that. It's quite a neat and creepy, interesting story.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's quite a... That's The Crane Husband by Kelly Barnhill.
Okay. So I have a bird story, too. It's not quite like that. I have to say that last month, was really great for reading. I'm really, really enjoying the reading I've been doing. And I think the winter reading challenge for getting me started on getting my goals in and just, you know, really going through a lot of different books. So the next title I have is Feathers Together. And this is by Karen Levis and Charles Santoso. And this is actually a story of two storks. It's inspired by a true story, I'll say. Capitan and Malena, they're best friends. And they're always together. And they're in Croatia, by the way. And they always go to warmer places, you know, when it's time to go. But what happens is that Malena gets hurt. She's got, I don't know if it's a broken wing, but you can tell in the illustrations that there's something not right. And she can't fly anymore. So when migration time comes, Klepetan is, you know, encouraged to go anyway without her. And Malena gets some help from a human friend, this again, based on a true story, to spend the winter. And Clepitan does return, and like with a lot of relationships, you know, when you've spent time away from each other in the beginning, it might be awkward. But very soon, in a lot of cases, you reconnect really soon, and you start talking again as best friends. And they are super companions. They did this for years, because I guess Milena never recovered really, and they spent a lot of time together and then apart, and they raised 66 birds or fledglings together. And I just think it's a really neat testament to friendship, whether they're feathered friends or otherwise. The last book I want to mention is Because I Had a Teacher. I've been thinking a lot about teachers lately, and I think about the relationship that teachers have to their students, and especially for that individual student who is really connecting with a teacher. Because I Had a Teacher is by Kobe Yamada. It's actually kind of an older book. I think it was published in 2015, but I just reread it recently. Because I Had a Teacher, I Love to Learn. I discovered that I can do so much more than I thought I could. And I realized it's okay when some things are harder than others. And I guess I just think about that relationship and hope that any teachers out there listening, you are loved and so appreciated for the work that you, the investment you make in your students and the relationship you build with them. So I recommend other titles by Kobe Yamada as well. But yeah, that's all I have to say.
That's awesome. I echo this about teachers. Wow, mm-hmm, what heroes. Much. And how many of us can remember that teacher that took exactly. that, like, cared yes. about us or saw us as we really were.
Or something they said, yeah. like, really influenced yeah. who you became mm-hmm. or where you're going in life, what direction you're taking.
It's so amazing. Yeah, mm-hmm. especially if kids aren't getting that at home, to have that person that just really sees them. Yeah, that's awesome to have a book about that. And I know we've talked about Patricia Polacco. She has a couple books about that, too, mm-hmm. just about mm-hmm. that one teacher that just... Right. And it's perfect for our theme today, I think. I also have to say a book about those birds. That just sounds fantastic.
Amazing.
That is not something that you hear about all the time. I mean, just yeah. the wealth of picture books on yeah. these topics. Yeah. It's just, I can't yeah. believe it. Yes. It was not like that when we were children.
No.
I can say that
you
for
are
sure.
Correct. Yes.
No. Books were great, but not like this. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah. we were living in good times for books in that
for
way.
For sure.
My last book is really completely all about relationships, and it's a self-help book that came out a couple years ago, started as from a therapist, Nedra Glover Tawab, as an Instagram feed that was very popular, and then eventually she came out with a book, and I'd followed the Instagram first, so I was really excited when this book came out. It's called Set Boundaries, Find Peace, A Guide to Reclaiming Yourself. And this book touches on every kind of relationship you can think of, starting with the relationship with yourself, your relationship to work, you know, intimate relationships, friend relationships, family relationships, parent-child relationships. So everything is covered in here. And this really is a you know, a self-help psychology-oriented title, but it's very accessible, and it walks you through what is a healthy boundary. There are many people who don't know, and probably most people don't know as much about this as they should or want, or, you know, because this isn't something that, you know, you get in school, you know what I mean? It's like, how do you get this? What are you modeled for boundaries that you've seen and then you pick up? So she lays out what healthy boundaries are, what unhealthy boundaries are, and gives all, actually these sentence talking points for helping people set boundaries in different areas of their life. And again, it kind of goes back to some books we talked about, like rest is resistance, even your boundaries with work. Or if you're trying to, you know, do exercise and eat healthy, your boundaries with yourself to keep up your own health goals. But then, of course, the things you can think of, like boundaries with people that push your boundaries, what to do when someone pushes your boundaries, how to set a boundary, what to do with the guilt and the discomfort that you feel when you set a boundary, especially if you're not very good at this. And so it covers so much ground. It's one of those books that, you know, I read it and I was like, wow, okay, this is a lot. And it's settling, and it's going to take a really long time to settle. I think this is mm-hmm. really nicely related to Brené Brown's books, which to me introduced the ideas of boundaries and mm-hmm. a good accompaniment to that, if you enjoy Brené Brown's book, this is another kind of offshoot of that idea. So an extremely important book, and I'm happy to say that Nedra Glover-Tawab has a new book coming out later this month, actually, called Drama Free, and it's a more of a deep dive into family relationships in particular.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then I did promise we have one romance. It is Highly Suspicious and Unfairly Cute by Talia Hibbert. I love Talia Hibbert. I absolutely love Talia Hibbert. Talia Hibbert is a British woman of color, hilarious. She just writes fun, funny banter. She highlights people with chronic illness, disabilities, people of color, underrepresented characters in her stories. And this is actually, I had to ask Maddie's permission to do this one. It is her first teen novel.
Yeah, it's and, at home for me too, but yeah. I haven't started it yet.
And it's on the imprint that, what are their names? I'm sorry. It's the Yoons.
David Yoon and
yeah.
Selena Yoon? Nicola?
Nicola. David and Nicola Yoon put together, which I'm very, very happy about. But it's a fresh take on the couple is a teen couple. They were best friends in middle school. They're now kind of well past this. They're looking at where they're going with their careers. They are approaching A-levels in Britain. They are now enemies, arch enemies. The communication is horrid. They are just not hearing each other, seeing each other, and they're going to be forced to work together in this book and trying to decide, or they end up going into a program where there is a scholarship on the line, and it requires group work and working together and this sorts of stuff. So they're going to have to sort of face whatever happened back in middle school that they both see totally differently and actually discuss it. And it's if you like the friends, enemies to lovers trope, that's what this is. But the banter, the humor is all very good, and it's interesting. I find both of the characters likable. I actually am a little bit more attuned to Brad than Celine. Brad has OCD. He has learned to kind of make it so he can work in the world. He has better control of it. They figured it out early enough and got him help to help him figure out how to work in the world better. But I don't think Celine kind of gets what that takes for him to do it. And there's a lot of going. There's hurt feelings on both sides that they both have to get past. But it's a very, very fun story too.
Cool. Excellent. I can't wait to get to it.
I don't think I've heard of many books with OCD. Mm-hmm. Character. That is really.
She's done a few because she is, and it's that's something that's actually fairly common in her books.
That's excellent.
So, and it's mental health and chronic illness are things that she hits quite often in her stories. I really love her writing though. It's great humor, great romances. So.
And the cover is really cute.
And
it's this shade of pink that looks like delicious or something.
Yep. And I'm not a pink candy fan, so this is one of those.
Cotton candy, yes.
Yeah, it's a really nice shade. I'm not really a huge pink fan, too, but it's cute.
She's a podcaster who focuses on conspiracy theories. That's her. Yep.
Wow.
So, and she's quite popular for it. She's got.
With a serious tone or with.
Ish.
Okay.
Well, she's talented.
She wants to become a. She really, really wants to become a barrister, and so getting to all of that.
Wow.
And so it's very interesting that they both have their own goals, but sort of figuring out how they're going to get there is part of the issue that they're dealing with individually. So it's fun. It's a fun book.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.